Our sermon this morning is called Taking the Pulse of the Planet. What's been a quiet but busy week on Earth, my home planet, it's springtime. We are busy, busy people. It's tax time. I actually got mine done last week. That's a record for me. It's also time to begin maybe cutting grass. My neighbors have already begun cutting, and I'm hoping my power mower will start, but I'm going to get to it. It's Easter time for many people, so that's special foods, special visitors, and it's also Cardinal baseball time. It's rumored that at least a few people in here took that day off for the home opener, but we won't go beyond that. Even for busy people, it's almost impossible to ignore nature in April. We have front row seats to the spring blossoms of daffodils, the flowering of redbuds and dogwoods. Even a walk on our church grounds will document the beautiful flowers we have. If you walk through the woods, you'll be bombarded by blues and pinks of the wildflowers. The cardinals, that's the kind with feathers, and bluebirds, they're heard loudly as they're courting, nest building, and catching insects. And with the threat of frost, I think, behind us, gardeners are getting ambitious out there. They're doing the four S's, the sun, the soil, the seeds, and a little bit of sweat, and they're performing pretty close to what we call a miracle. Planting seeds and green shoots will emerge. The good news, we can experience all of this in our tamed backyard. And as we're warmed by that spring sun, we become energized, almost as if the sap is raising in us. If the blossoms or birds won't get your attention, the weather will. Weather can change around here, as we found from yesterday today, going from 40 degrees to perhaps 80 degrees. Cracks of thunder and bolts of lightning during the night. 65 mile an hour winds are the threat of a tornado. That will get your attention. It's not nice to fool or to ignore Mother Nature. We also have front row seats to rivers. Water is our lifeline for fish, frogs, crayfish, heron, hawks, and of course us. Even as we enter the church, I know a number of us kind of turn around and look back at that mighty Mississippi River. Her beauty and her mystery has inspired writers, musicians, and artists for decades. I think Jared's singing of Old Man River attests to that. And the threats of spring floods can generate fears, and we learn a valuable lesson. You cannot tame Mother Nature, even with 27 dams and levees. The river has shaped our human economic and spiritual experience for thousands of years. 1,000 years ago, it would have been the Cahokians with large canoes going up and down the river. In the 1850s, we had apparently 1,100 steamboats docking here in Alton. And today, it still inspires us. April invites us into nature. A hike in the woods, viewing the sky on a starry night, or experiencing the transition from night to dawn as the sun rises, or a little canoe trip on Piesaw River. It will renew your body and your soul. There's no app for anything like that. You have to get out there. This is the celebration side of Earth Day. But there is a second story. And that's not one of celebration. It evokes a different response. Not what nature does for us, but it's what we're doing to Mother Nature. Humanity is perhaps being as overwhelming the natural forces of the Earth. Can humans really be a serious threat to nature? Well, I have an accumulating stack of books on my desk in my den. I haven't read all of them, I just buy them. Maybe I should bring that up to my therapist sometime. But these are not cheery books. They have strange words such as collapse, catastrophic, final hour, worst case scenario in their titles. And they all share a common theme that our affluent lifestyle, how we live, nearly 7 billion people on planet Earth, and a commitment to an economic growth at any cost has put us on a collision course with the ecosystems of planet Earth. The prosperity and wealth has come at a great cost. It's devastating the planet and creating poverty in third world countries. They proclaim, these books do, that we are living in an industrial economic bubble. You know what bubbles do? Eventually, they burst. They could be bankrupting the planet. Just a few of the titles of these books, not enough to get us depressed. One is called Collapse: How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed. The Coming Resource War. Countdown to Global Catastrophe. That one kept me up late at night. The Global Food Crisis. The Emerging Thirst: Global Water Scarcity. Running on Empty. If you've ever been driving along an interstate and you're running on empty, this is our whole nation may be running. And finally, A World Without Ice Caps. You get the picture of those. Along with a lot of daily headlines, we're living in a 21st century with lots of risk. And our meat-eating, car-driving, carbon-addictive ways have created some of this serious ecological debt. And the payment is now coming due in the form of degraded water, air, and soil. The one book I did bring along is called Collapse by Jared Diamond. And he looks at literally hundreds of societies that have come before us. And he asks the question, right at their peak in terms of population and wealth and power and influence, they begin unraveling and falling apart. And he has, I think, a powerful question: why does that happen? The one story I like best is Easter Island. And I thought, because it is Easter, I had to work that in some way. Easter Island, it's a remote 66 square mile island about 2,000 miles off the coast of Peru, very isolated. It was a thriving Polynesian settlement. According to Diamond, it had 20,000 inhabitants, was in a tropical rich area, had 65-foot palm trees all over, and they carved 800 gigantic stone figures called moais, some of these weighing over 20 tons. Even today, they're trying to figure out how did they accomplish that. This island was rediscovered by a Dutch explorer in 1725, and at this time, he found a wasteland, a scattering of a few hundred people, not a single tree remaining. Their culture collapsed. There's some evidence that they pulled the ecological rug out from under themselves. The wild animals, gone, soil erosion, and oh yes, those trees. What were they thinking when the man cut down the last tree? They had to know. And with no trees, they could build no canoes to leave that island. Now the scary point, for Diamond anyway, he's saying Easter Island is really a metaphor for planet Earth. We live on an island. And if we get into trouble, there's no place to go. There will be nobody to help us. He thinks we're running a worldwide experiment. And if we don't run it well, we could end up like Easter Island. Can we harm Mother Earth? Is there a way to take the vital signs? So today, if you will, imagine Earth is our patient. And we'll look for some symptoms, see if we can make a diagnosis to see if indeed humans are hazardous to her health. Our medical team is called the United Nations Millennium Ecological Systems. I can never remember that, just call it MIA. They have been documenting for 20 years the human growth, what impact it's having on worldwide ecological systems. It consists of 10,000 scientists, hundreds of orbiting satellites that we can't see, and they're monitoring the planet. They provide data on the natural processes of earthquakes, hurricanes, and the oceans, but they're also monitoring the impact that humans are having on the glaciers and on the forests and on those areas. They have identified a number of symptoms, and I'm going to come just with five or six of the symptoms. The number one symptom they identified is climate change. And of all the issues, climate change has to be the most threatening, but also the most complex. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around trying to understand. It's probably beyond my comprehension. But apparently, we've been burning a lot of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. And these energies have made it possible to grow our population and to grow our economy. But they're also releasing greenhouse gases, particularly CO2, in the atmosphere faster than nature can recycle. The scientists, they're sounding the alarm, and probably hundreds, if not thousands, of environmental groups are sounding the alarm too, yet it continues. Mother Nature is now running a temperature. The ice sheets of Greenland, they're melting. The polar ice caps, they're shrinking. The glaciers, they're on their way out. I think those are powerful indicators something's happening out there. What I find a little disturbing, and even as the polar ice caps are melting, Russia and the multinational corporations are jockeying for the best Arctic location for future drilling rigs. It's business as usual. Drill, baby, drill. Now, drill, baby, drill, I did borrow that from a group, so taking that liberty. Second symptom, Mother Nature is losing her forests. A healthy planet needs healthy forests. It regulates the water cycle, stabilizes the soil, and soaks up carbon dioxide. It provides habitat for flora and fauna, recreation and beauty, and a little bit of lumber. One half of the world's temperate and tropical rainforests have now been cut or cleared for agriculture. In a typical year, in an area the size of Iowa is being cut. It's business as usual, cut, baby, cut. Symptom number three is losing topsoils. Nearly 30% of the topsoils have eroded up in our rivers, taking fertilizers and pesticides along with them. For every one bushel of corn grown in Illinois, and we can really grow corn, two bushels of topsoil end up in Piesaw Creek and eventually end up in the Mississippi River. Millions of acres are lost to urban sprawl. It's business as usual, erode, baby, erode. Symptom four, the earth is losing biodiversity. The plants and animals, some claim within 50 years, one half of all plants and animals, life on earth, will be extinct. The oceans, they were once thought to be boundless. Now 90% of the large predatory fish, those are the ones we like to eat, are now depleted due to harvesting. So what? Fish, baby fish. Losing fresh water, symptom number five. As global thirst soars, rivers are running dry, lakes are disappearing, and water tables are dropping. 70% of the fresh water is now used for irrigation for agriculture. So if we run out of water, that means we run out of food. Many of the world's great rivers, the Yellow in China, the Ganges, the Indus, and the Nile, they're failing to make it to the sea, or have just a trickle by the time they reach the ocean. In Illinois, it's not a shortage of water, but it's a quality of water. The Mississippi, by the time it reaches the Gulf, has enough pesticides and herbicides and fertilizers to create an 8,000-mile dead zone. We worry, and rightly so, what happened just about a year ago with the oil spillage. I think the dead zone is everything as serious as that. And I'm taking the word experts for it. They say there are about 200 dead zones in the world in terms of where rivers drain into the ocean. Quite simply, if there is no water, there is no life. It's business as usual. Drain, baby, drain. And finally, one more symptom, and this is not an environmental one. It's a social one. We have a widening of the gap between the rich and the poor, the rich and poor gap. As the global economy converts nature into a multi-trillion dollar market, poverty does persist. About 25% of the population on planet Earth, they travel first class. That's probably us in here. We have enough food, enough energy, enough housing, we have computers, we have cars, we have the good life. The bottom 25% are traveling third class. They're undernourished. They drink contaminated water. They lack medical treatment. They have a shortened lifespan. They face a destiny of hopelessness and chronic injustice. First class passengers consume about 20 times as much resources, and we create about 10 times as much waste. Planet-wide, there's an increasing concentration of wealth in the top 5% of the population. So what? Consume, baby, consume. So here's the diagnosis, and I'll let you decide whether our patient is alive and well, sick and dying, struggling, or maybe having a midlife crisis. Water use are diminishing and clogging the flow in her arteries. The drilling and mining for oil, blowing up mountains, are symptoms of her bone disease. And finally, the widening gap between the rich and poor is demoralizing and breaking the spirit. If not Mother Earth, maybe it's breaking the spirit of the human species. The science communities have found that 60% of our ecosystems are degraded. I'm going to skip the real depressing stuff here. Well, how do we respond? I think the scientific facts are in. I think we have a teachable moment in front of us. Some people like to call this the tipping point. Either we do something now or irreversible damage will occur. The world we're leaving, our children and our grandchildren, could be truly scary. Yet our government is not able to create policy. They're frozen. Some would argue in the last decade we've gone backwards. Our communities, our corporations, and our faith communities have also been on the default position. It's business as usual. Western society is very good at facts, but facts alone is not going to change our culture. It's not going to change our behavior. Something's missing. What has been missing in the public discourse is a moral dialogue. That moral dialogue has to come from our religious and spiritual communities. They have to remind us of our moral obligation of sustainability. Sustainability is kind of a new word. It says we're consuming too much and the resources of Mother Nature are finite. And if I can sum that in about 30 words, it says, as we fulfill our daily needs, we have a moral obligation to hand over to the next generation, your children and grandchildren, a life-supporting ecosystem capable of they meeting their needs. Now, that doesn't sound too new to me. I think Native Americans have been using, there's some ancient wisdom there, they call it the seven principles, or the seventh generations. We should live so the next generations, too, can live our same way. Now, sustainability is hard work. We can't tell the next generation, well, I tried, I recycled, I wrote a letter or two to my senator, and I really did care a lot. I went to a couple of Earth Day events, but the next generation will not be impressed. They're not going to be grateful if the water they have is not drinkable or if their air is not breathable. They may not care if you and I were members of the United Church, Unitarian Church, I almost went back to a Freudian slip, so my original church, if the temperature of the planet is 10 degrees warmer. Will it take a crisis to wake it up, wake us up? I think we've had some. The Titanic, when she went down, that was significant enough that they created lifeboats enough for all the passengers. I thought the drilling BP disaster that happened just about 1 year ago, killing 11 people, injuring more, and spilling 5 million barrels would be a crisis point, a collective wake-up call. Apparently, it was not. The challenges are dawning, and I think the first step we have to do is to admit we have a problem. A lot of people have admitted, yes, we have a problem, but they always do a yes, but. Yes, but the economy is more important than the environment right now. I sometimes fall into that. Yes, but technology will solve our problems. If we exhaust one resource, we will find something else. Yes, but I'm just an individual. How can I turn around population growth or deal with corporate greed? Yes, but it's somebody else's problem, not mine. Maybe it's in God's hands. What needs to be done? I think if we were being invaded by aliens from space, if they were heating up our planet, if they were putting mercury and toxins in our water, if they were drying up our rivers, if they were blowing up mountaintops to get coal, if they killed off 20% of our plants and animals, what we would do? I think we would get in touch with our inner Bruce Willis and we would get the job done. Some of us, and I think some of you in here, have already turned into action. You've set your moral compass in the right direction. Everybody has their little point that brings us around. For some of us, it was the polar bears in that BBC film, I think, showing a polar bear not finding any ice and apparently was going to drown. For others, it certainly was the scenes of the Deep Horizon drilling platform and the oil rusting up on the shore. For others, some of you are moved for science. You want data, and when you see that J curve of the population growth accelerating, our CO2 accelerating up there, that's enough to get you convinced. And for some of us, it's the weather. Weather used to be a friendly, neutral conversation breaker. Is it hot enough for you? Or it's cold? Or boy, we had enough rain. Now when you bring up the weather, you're only one step away from climate change, recalling the torrents of rain and the flooding of rivers in Pakistan just about a year ago. The rain never stopped. Or the record droughts and heat wave in Russia, resulting in massive forest fires. It's this point in the sermon where a river Van Zant usually puts a solution in, or at least he gives us hope, or says there are always opportunities in any challenge. I'm not him. I don't have any answers, and I don't have any solutions. I think if you really look at the scientific data out there, what's happening on Earth, and if you aren't pessimistic, you don't understand the data, or you're in denial. On the other hand, if you look locally at what people are really doing, you should be optimistic and hopeful. If you're not hopeful, perhaps you should have your pulse taken. I'm inspired by a number of local things going on. The United Congregations of Metro East, our church is a member. There are 9 churches. They have taken up the twin issue of racial reconciliation and caring for creation. Both big jobs, important jobs. The Caring Creation Group, they have put on 4 workshops, and they were instrumental in getting the city of Alton to sign on as a cool city, pledging to reduce carbon footprints. Without this church and that UCM, it would not have happened. The Nature Institute in Godfrey and the Watershed in Edwardsville have restored land areas and provide nature learning experiences for thousands of children each year. That gives me hope, makes me optimistic. This weekend, Jennifer and I were up at Pere Marquette, where 100 environmental educators are. What a dedicated group of people. They're using nature to teach math and reading and science and critical thinking. They're an inspiring group, and they're going to bring that back to their classrooms. Several people sitting among us, and you know who you are? You're environmental heroes. You have been instrumental in prairie restoration in this area. You've been educating the public on native plants and birds and rivers and issues for decades. Yes, David Wiseman and Audrey, I'm looking at you. Environmental heroes. I'm also hopeful. Several miles from here is a world-class river research center located in an LEED building. That's a green building. It's a wonderful building. They are connecting scientists and citizens from the headwaters to the Gulf of Mexico to study the Mississippi watershed. The dream is to understand and restore the natural process of the river. It's just a profound world event we have going on there. What are you going to do on Monday morning? It depends on who you are. If you're a parent or a grandparent or a child, a good place to start is get out in your backyard or to a park. Many children suffer from something called nature deficit disorder. That means they've never caught lightning bugs, never went after crawfish in a creek, have not heard hoot owls or chirping crickets on a somber night. They've never experienced that chance of in the backyard digging a hole, trying to dig to China. It's not going to happen. They're not going to get there, but it's a great experience to learn. Now, there's lots of reasons why kids are not out there. There's some fear out there, strangers, traffic out there. Yeah, there's ticks out there and things like that. But also, I think they have other distractions, digital distractions, video games. A typical 10-year-old child, if there is a typical 10-year-old child, they can name only 9 plants. They can identify few, if any, planets or constellations. But they can recognize 300 brand names. If they're not having their childhood experiences developed, I think as they grow up as adults, they will not work to save the gifts of the Earth. Let's look at the other end of the age spectrum, the baby boomers. You're at a pivotal point. I should say we're at a pivotal point to pass on to the next next generation, democratic values, principles of faith, and a livable planet. Boomers, this is your last chance to have a big impact on the planet. You have the time, you have the wisdom, and I think you have the financial means to make a difference. But we need to get off of our, we need to get out of our lazy boy recliners, are the first one. Yeah, we worked hard, and we deserve to sit around, but we have accumulated a lot of wisdom. We know what's going on in Congress. We know what's going on with politicians and corporate money. We vote. We know how to knock on doors and to write letters to our senators. We possess the skills to turn things around. We have witnessed firsthand the degrading air and water and food. We cannot be bought off with AARP discounts or reduced green fees. We are citizens first, customers or consumers later down the line. We need to worry less about our colonoscopy results or getting into heaven and more about turning over to the next generation, perhaps your children and grandkids, a clean and livable planet. UU principles, we have the seventh principle. It states respect for an interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I think what that really means is we're called upon to be good stewards of the environment and the people who inhabit that. So in honor of Earth Day, UU churches from California to Maine, or from Florida to Washington, however you orient yourself, they're engaging their members to commit doing at least one more thing than they're already doing to care for the planet. I think UU folks probably have a lead on taking care of the planet. And I'd like you to take for a moment in your service bulletin, there's a small sheet. It says, walk gently on the earth. And I would like you to consider to take a pledge. Keep it simple. It should be a 40-day commitment. 40 days has some religious significance for some of us. This is to keep you and I mindful. So if you're willing, if you would put a pledge on that, we will post it up here. I will take a picture of that, and I will send it to the UU National Group who are doing that. Just some suggestions about keeping it simple. You could have a meatless Monday or a vegetarian Wednesday. You could walk or take a bike rather than a car if you're less than 1 mile. You could drive 3 miles slower. You could bottle your own water, no water in plastic bottles. You could buy local or a fair trade product at least once in a while. Write a letter to the editor or congressperson on a green issue. If you eat meat, maybe make it a sustainable choice. Take a child or yourself to a walk in the park. Write a poem, maybe about the Mississippi River, or paint those lovely dogwood trees out there. Encourage a friend to walk gently. Commit to a daily act over the next 40 days, and for the sake of the earth, and for all who live there, I think we will be heading on your way. Thank you.